Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Okay, we're back. And joining us, we're quite honored to have author Kara Lee Carter. Thank you for joining me on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, before we get into the book that you've just done, let's talk about where you came from and what started you in this path of being an author.
I got started in the field of journalism when I was just 16 years old, actually. A few afternoons every week, I was working at a daily newspaper as part of a course that I was enrolled in for my last year of high school. So it was my experience working at that newspaper that made me realize that that was the type of career that I wanted to have, to be able to tell people stories. So I decided to go ahead and go on to post-secondary and pursue journalism. But what's interesting is that while I was working at the newspaper, I was writing more featured style articles as opposed to like the hard hitting news. And it was during that time that I was there that there was a missing persons case of a teenage girl that came into the newsroom. And it was all over the province where I was from. So her murderer, it turned out that she was murdered. He was 16 and he was actually like helping the police search for her for 3 weeks before he confessed to her murder. And he led them to her body eventually. But because I worked at the newspaper at the time, I was privy to some details of the case that weren't published necessarily in the newspaper. And a few years after that case went through the courts and everything, that's when I read my very first true crime book. And that was the actual case that I read, was all about that, because, you know, it was something that touched so many people in our province and so many people were interested in it. So that case stuck with me all throughout my career. And while we don't get a whole lot of murders in the province that I'm from, the ones that do really do make the headlines, but this one has stuck with me for over a decade.
Are there other people that you've looked to or you follow to or listen, you know, like other authors in the same area as your favorite sort of ones that you like?
I read a lot of different genres, but the main one that I really look to is actually R.J. Parker. He's also my publisher. But it was only in the past year or so that I really got back into reading true crime. So I've read a lot of his work and J.J. Slade, and I have several that I do read, but I gotta say, I look to RJ's style of writing too, because I really like how he does short cases. You know, there's several of his books that, you know, they're short reads, but you get enough information about each case, and, you know, it's just fascinating, the details that you get from these books.
This newest book that you've got that just came out, the Canadian Psycho, and that's the true story of Luca Magnotta.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this your first true crime book, or have you written ones before?
No, this is my very first book.
Okay.
My writing has been more to do with my journalism background. So while I've been writing the same style of articles, nothing this in-depth, nothing this length before, because it is over 120 pages. So yeah, I'm very excited about it, and looking forward to the beginning of this aspect of my career.
How long did it take you to do this? Like, there must be a lot of research and a lot of time to put mm-hmm. together a project like this, not only the writing part, but just all the information.
Yeah, I spoke to RJ about doing this project just before Christmas, I believe it was, or just after Christmas. So once I was on board for it, he suggested a couple of possible cases for me to look into. And, you know, I did some research on Luca, and that case was the one that I knew that I really wanted to tell this story, because it was such a media sensation. If you Google his name, there's just so many articles out there. So the research aspect of it did take quite some time. It was very involved. This was a little bit of a different experience for me, because I generally do all my interviews myself when doing any writing. But for this book, I relied heavily on articles and information that was already published and on the internet. I started researching the book months before the release date. I read everything I could get my hands on through online searches, so I was as familiar with the case as possible before I even put any pen to paper, just so I could get an idea of what needed to be included in this. And, you know, I think that my background as a journalist really helped me to determine what needed to be in this book for sure. So the other thing, too, was I used a lot of information from the psychological report that was presented by the defense in this case, and I think that really gave a lot of insight to the readers about the facts that Luca was giving his doctors.
Let's start out with some of the aspects of the case. So, for the people that don't know, who was Luca Magnotta, and what did he do, or where did it all start for him?
In May 2000, a janitor found a suitcase with a human torso in it in a neighborhood in Montreal, Canada. So police were called in, but the evidence they collected led them too late to the door of Luca Magnotta, who had committed the crime. He had fled the country at that time after the murder. And what he did was actually he filmed the indignities that he committed to his victim, and he posted them on the internet. Now, he posted this days before the body was actually discovered, and people had been reporting it to police, but police thought that it was a fake. So within, I think, 4 hours of it being posted, there were over 300,000 hits to this video, and it was posted on the website BestScore. So an international manhunt ensued once they identified him as the murderer, and he was eventually caught in Europe. So from there, he also sent some of his victim's body parts in the mail to some schools and to some members of government. And then he had to be extradited back to Canada to face the charges that were brought against him.
So did he have a point to all of this? Like, you know, this person he killed and dismembered and did things mm-hmm. to, like, why would he send the limbs or parts to the schools?
This all really goes back to his background from when he was a child. He was obsessed with obtaining fame, and We'll get into this in a little bit, just how obsessed he was with it. You know, some of the things that he did in high school, Luca was considered very vain. Like, people who knew him, they always said he was vain, always obsessed with his looks. He had to look in the mirror anytime he passed by. He had to stop and look at himself to make sure that he looked okay. After he graduated, in high school is when his mental issues surfaced. And that's when he was diagnosed with schizophrenia, as a paranoid schizophrenic. Going back to his desire for fame, in 2004, he appeared in some pornographic films under a couple of names like Jimmy. He also used Rocca because he wasn't originally born as Luca Magnata. He later changed his name. He was actually born as Eric Newman. Under this name, he actually had a run-in with the law previously. He appeared in a Toronto court on charges of fraud and impersonating a woman for a credit card purchase over $16,000 worth of goods. And he had a dozen criminal charges against him. But one of the other things he had is a sexual assault charge against a 21-year-old woman he had met online in 2004. But she had the mental capacity of an 8 to 12-year-old. Now, with this case, those charges were dropped against him. And if he had actually been convicted, he would have been a registered sex offender, which would have had a huge impact on his life because he actually would have had to report to officers who supervised him. So he has had a history of some criminal behavior before this, shortly after. And with his sentencing, he never did any jail time, which is shocking, you know. Mm-hmm. If those charges hadn't been dropped, I think it would have been very different for him. His life would have been completely different, but unfortunately they didn't. And, you know, he basically didn't get very much, he didn't get jail time. He just got community service. And from there, he decided to change his name in 2006. And that's when he gained Luca Magnata.
Was there a certain reason why he changed his name, or do we know that?
That's not something that I really knew. He kind of just wanted a fresh start, is what I came across in my research for it. And then after that, you know, he was in court again, but this time for a bankruptcy charge. So a lot of it was tied to money. You know, I guess he was just spending beyond his means. So he declared bankruptcy. From then, his obsession with fame really kicked in. He auditioned for OutTV's reality program Cover Guy, but he wasn't selected to be on the show. He talked to the Naked News using an alias where he talked about being a high-end male escort. And in that same year, in 2007, is when he made up a story about his involvement with serial killer Carla Homolka. And as many people know, Carla, along with her husband, Paul Bernardo, raped and murdered her little sister, as well as some teenage schoolgirls who were enslaved, raped, tortured, and killed. And that is actually a case that was covered by Peter Vronsky in Volume 3 of the Crimes Canada series. So he had actually put out internet rumors linking him to Carla Homolka, and then after that, phoned up some media outlets claiming they weren't involved, and, you know, went on and did some interviews saying that, you know, he was getting death threats and it was conspiracy against him and things like that. So he wanted to pull that spotlight to himself.
So he was just doing this all for notoriety. He just wanted to be famous.
He just wanted to be famous, and, you know, this book really chronicles, you know, how it just went further and further and further. And, you know, over the years, there'd be new rumors and newspaper stories that, you know, would link him to Carla Homolka. So, you know, he just did whatever he could to get the fame.
And he didn't really have anything to do with Carla Homolka, did he?
Oh, gosh, no. The other thing, too, like, he would continue from there. He just continued auditioning for reality TV shows, and you know, he, none of his attempts to gain attention worked. You know, the book that that I've written really chronicles his journey about and how he would fall deeper and deeper into fabricating like this enormous online presence. He had like 70 Facebook accounts, you know, which is totally crazy.
I can hardly keep up with one.
Exactly, right? And then, you know, he would make blog posts. There was one in particular that he wrote that was, or he said that he had written, How to Completely Disappear and Never Be to Be Found. So this article was largely plagiarized, but, you know, when you think about the actions that he took, you wonder if, you know, he thought of this and when he knew he would need this in the future, you know? Mm. And that's one thing with this case, like, it was so hard to tell fact from fiction if you're looking at any of the posts that Luca himself made.
What do you think made him cross over into murder? I mean, I can see, you know, okay, so he's, you know, whatever condition that makes him want to be famous, and he's doing all sorts of pranks and Facebook accounts and name changes and all this stuff to create attention, trying to be on reality shows. I mean, that all makes sense. But to actually go and murder someone, cut up their parts, and send them out, isn't that, I mean, that's, like, you know, because we all want certain things, you know, we want, I don't mind a little bit of fame or a little bit of money and things like that, but I'm not going to jump out and start cutting up bodies and filming it and sending it to schools to get that, you know? So what made him, was that his first murder? Was that, or do you think he's done it before?
I think this was his first murder. Now, I could be wrong.
Right.
You know, some of the experts didn't think that it was. In fact, the police were investigating with some, were in touch with some other police departments to try to determine if he had done some other murders that kind of were similar. There was a Hollywood sign murder in the U.S. that they did get in touch with the Montreal police to see if it may have been Luca. It actually wasn't, is what they found, but because it was somewhat similar, it was something they had to check out. So there were several cases that, you know, they had to look into it to see if he had committed murder before.
Yeah, it just seems like it's a big jump. To me, I, you know, like I said, to all of a sudden do it.
Well, with Luca, he actually, it seemed like it was a progression because he did make some animal cruelty videos as well. And that is really what launched him into fame a little bit, because people were investigating to try to find out who had made animal cruelty videos and posted them on YouTube. And there was quite an extensive investigation into this by animal activist groups as well. So they spent quite some time trying to prove it was him after he posted the original video. Not long, it was a while later that he posted a second video that got people moving again, trying to figure out who had done it. And he was actually mocking the people who were investigating him, you know, leaving tips and stuff. He actually sent, or the group believes that he's the one who sent them the information saying it was actually Luca Magnotta that they're looking for.
Now, how did this affect his... Now, were you able to find out about his family? So, like, where did he come from? As in, like, was he living in a fairly good family and a good housing, brothers, sisters, parents, all that? Or what was the situation that he came from?
Yeah, Luca, he grew up... in Scarborough, Ontario. His parents were teenagers when they met, and they got pregnant shortly after. So Luca, or Eric as he was born, he was firstborn, and they named their kid after Clint Eastwood and Kirk Douglas. So, you know, even then, you know,
yeah.
Right away, you know, there's a little bit of fame in there already. So after that, they had a son and a daughter a few years later. So with his home life, his mother didn't graduate from high school herself. She dropped out when she was in grade 9, but she still insisted on homeschooling the kids. So they didn't have any contact with kids their own age. And, you know, Luca himself would say his mother was obsessed with cleanliness and, you know, things like that, that she would lock them out of the house and car, and, you know, she caused the death of one of their family pets, a rabbit, by putting it outside in the winter. Oh. He also said that she would dress him in female clothing when he was younger and made him wear diapers when he was 6 years old because he was still wetting the bed. So, you know, he put a lot of blame on his mother, his relationship there. He said that his siblings made fun of him, his family made fun of him because, you know, he would cross his legs and he would sometimes wear makeup, things like that. He played with Barbie dolls, you know, and his family didn't like that kind of thing. So, you know, all of that played into it, I'm sure. He said that he was bullied in school. He struggled in school because eventually after his parents divorced, he did get put into the school system. And he was a couple grades behind. But yeah, he you know, maintains that he was bullied and beat up. And then later, you know, when I did find the psychological report, one of his previous classmates, you know, described him as almost too odd to be a target for bullying. So, you know, she said that people kind of left him alone. So, you know, you have two sides to the story. You have Luca saying that he was, you know, bullied and beat up. And then you have some of the other classmates who said, no, that didn't really happen. Right. So he, you know, his former classmate said that he seemed to have a really negative view of himself and was, you know, sensitive to criticism.
Right.
On his father's side, his father was hearing voices and feeling suicidal. He was angry and delusional. And his father was actually originally diagnosed as bipolar and manic depressive. But later on, that was changed to paranoid schizophrenic manic depressive. So he was on a bunch of different drugs. So, and you know what? And it's unfortunate, but like at the age of 18, Luca even followed in those footsteps because he started hearing voices. And in 2001, that's really when his extensive history with, you know, hospitals and doctors started.
So was he ever diagnosed with any condition at all? Or?
Back then in 2001, it was as a paranoid schizophrenic. He dropped out of high school. He didn't finish high school. He was in a number of dead-end jobs, but they never lasted long. So he had a really hard time keeping a job. He was getting disability support payments. You know, he was in a psychiatric group home. He overdosed on some of his meds one time and had to be rushed to the hospital. You know, and really, like, there was a decade of just appointments with doctors and visits and stuff in Canada and the United States. And, you know, he, even his living arrangements, he would bounce around. So there wasn't a lot of stability there.
And this is him as a model and sex worker. So was he actually a model?
Well, in his early 20s, that's when he started his career in the sex trade. He did some internet porn with webcams. But he said he gave it up because there were too many crazy people out there.
Wow.
Yes. In 2002, he became a stripper, but, you know, that only lasted a few months for him, and then he followed that up by working as an escort. Then, you know, he said, it's hard to know what's truth and what's not, but he did say that he was raped sometimes during that career, and that's when he moved into pornographic films.
Now, he eventually got convicted of several things. So not only did he do the murder, but I guess so what did he do on film for people? Because it says indignity to a body. So what did he have sex with it or something?
There's quite a bit. okay. I unfortunately did have to watch this video in order to describe it for the book. It's one of the things that I left to last to do because I knew I had to write about the victim as well, and I wouldn't be able to do that if I watched the video before. I knew I would have a much harder time, so I did save that for last because I knew it would be hard to watch, and I actually had to watch it 4 times. Mm. So the video that he posted is actually 10 minutes long.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And right off the very bat, you know, he has an image of, you know, a person laying on the bed still alive. And then it cuts to just a wide shot. And that's when he actually starts stabbing the body. And this goes on for quite some time. So you do see that.
Is he actually killing him at the time?
No.
No, he's dead already.
You don't actually see the murder take place itself. But then he starts to cut into the body. And he picks the camera up, and it's like you're looking through his eyes, basically. So it's really very, very disturbing. You know, he cuts away at some times, like, you know, after he started originally cutting into the body, he shows that he's already decapitated his victim. And, you know, he masturbates with some of the body parts in the video. Very, very disturbing. He simulates sex with the body. I don't know if he actually does have sex with the body in it. It was very hard to tell. He let a puppy on the bed and let the puppy, you know, bite into the body as well, where he had removed one of the limbs. And then he used a wine bottle to penetrate the torso anally, to have anal sex using this item. So yeah, and then, you know, he concluded the video with One shot of him laying on the bed, pantless, masturbating with a severed hand. And then he changed it up in headshots of a severed arm in the refrigerator. And the very final shot of that video is a picture of his victim with his throat slit.
Wow. Now that's a lot. Now, and he filmed all this and then he posted it online.
He did, yeah.
And so what did he post online to, for everybody to see? Did he put it on a big site?
Yeah, he posted it on Best Gore. He posted it on another couple sites as well. But the thing that you have to realize too is he actually started promoting this video online a week before he shot it, before any of this took place. Right? So, but to go even one step further is he bragged to a journalist in Europe about the fact that he was going to commit this crime, that he was going to murder somebody months before he did it.
Okay, so he actually kind of had this in mind, obviously.
He totally had this planned out, you know. The note that he sent to the journalist at the time, he didn't sign it with his own name, but it showed up the next day after that journalist had confronted Luca about the animal cruelty charges that people had laid against him. Because the animal cruelty charges they were charges, but the animal cruelty case, it was actually widespread. That story even got picked up in the UK. So that's why, you know, this journalist heard that Luca was over in Europe and confronted him about these charges and wrote a story on it as well. The next day he sent a letter, and it wasn't signed by him. But it was later confirmed in trial that, yes, Luca did send that letter to the journalist. So, yeah, like months before he committed the murder, he was bragging about the fact that he was going to commit it.
Wow. And so did he know who he was going to do this to? Now, this is someone named Lin Jun?
Yes, it is.
And so how did he meet this Lin Jun? Or how did it, was it kind of planned ahead of time, as in this person, or...
No, you know, police weren't really able to find out how they originally met. According from Luca, he actually said they met online on Craigslist, and that Lin responded to his request for a bondage partner. So, and that they met up and went back to his place. So, I mean, you know, obviously he had no idea that, you know, entering the apartment building with Luca, that would be the last time that he was ever free.
Yeah, that was a bad hookup on Craigslist. So that's happened, and mm-hmm. then so he posts it, and then that sort of made it so that. So did he mail the limbs to the schools first, and then post it, or?
It was around the same time. So after he had shot the video, he got rid of all the evidence in his apartment building. They had surveillance running 24/7. So, you know, the surveillance tapes actually shows him getting rid of the evidence. At one point you actually see him wearing the clothes that Lin had arrived in the building in on some of these trips that he made to in and out of the building. So Luca, he took his victim's clothes and wore them, and, you know, while he was cleaning up after himself after committing this murder. So he then put the torso in a suitcase, which he put in the garbage bin outside of his building. And that was left there for a few days. It wasn't discovered until people started complaining about the smell and coming from it. He was already in Europe by that time because he had booked a flight while he was cleaning up from the murder to Europe. So with the posting of the limbs and stuff, he did that before his flight as well. They released video of him. They show him very calmly going to the mall and, you know, dropping off the packages in the mail. They sent them to the Liberal and Conservative headquarters is where he sent some packages, as well as two separate schools. So all of that is also chronicled in the book as well as the notes that he had sent with them and the return addresses. The return addresses actually pulled it back to Carla Homolka.
Oh, that's crazy. And but what was the point of sending things to elementary schools? Like he sent limbs. So what was there a meaning that he said that he did that?
I think it was just for the shock value, honestly.
Certainly. And then to federal. So I see that he was also charged with harassing the prime minister and party.
This would be why.
Yeah. So that's really kind of, and so he had no real purpose other than just fame probably for that too.
Yeah. And I guess, with his mental health issues, he felt that, the government was out to get him. He always thought that, the government was spying on him, according to his psych evaluation. So, yeah. Mm. Yeah, he wanted to get back.
Yeah.
At the government for spying on him and things like that would be my guess there.
Yeah, he had a whole different world going on. So then he took off to Berlin, and how did they find him there?
Someone recognized him, actually, because, the police did release that he was in Europe. So they were doing searches of the area, but he was found in a cafe reading information about himself on the internet.
Wow.
So he was looking up information on to see what the media was covering about himself.
Isn't that strange, almost ironic in a way?
It just goes back to that narcissistic behavior,
So what happened to him then? Like so he got caught, brought mm-hmm. back to Canada, he went on trial, and they had no problem convicting him.
No, his defense, actually, he was going for what used to be the insanity defense, but it's now not criminally responsible. So his lawyer said that he shouldn't be held responsible because of his mental state. But I mean, you have the case where someone who had planned this murder months in advance. So yeah, they had some psychologists and, Luca didn't take the stand in his own defense. It all came down to the doctors, really, for pleading his case, as well as, some testimony from his family and whatnot. But.
And so now he got sentenced to, I guess, life?
He got life, but life in Canada is different. It means 25 years, unless he is classified as a dangerous offender. So, he could be out before he's 60.
Well, do you actually think he'll ever get out? But after this is a little bit drastic. I mean, I would it's not like he just got into a fight and passionate and killed someone. This is a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. During his defense, Luca tried to place the blame on a person named Manny, and this person, whether real or not, he played a starring role in this psychological evaluation that was presented in the trial. It was 124 pages long, and reading through it, Luca always reverted back to blaming this Manny person for the animal cruelty videos that he made and posted, and the murder of his victim, of Lynn, and everything that happened afterwards, the filming of it and posting it online. Everything was put back to Manny, even some of the acts that he committed as an escort, So yeah, he tried to place the blame on this other person. I think it was just so he could have a scapegoat, to try to have the police look for this other person, which they did try to do. They looked for him, but they couldn't find any evidence, or they couldn't find this person. And to me, in this day and age with the technology that exists, I think that if you can't find this person, it's probably because they don't exist.
Yeah, I would think too, because there'd be some sort of evidence of it, unless this person, this Manny, is some Secret Service agent that can hide.
Well, the other thing too is that, you know, Luca did admit to the fact that he would hear Manny's voice even if he couldn't see him. So, you know, that's one thing that factored it into the psychological evaluation, you know. So, yeah.
Well, who in his eyes, or who did he portray Manny to be?
It's someone who, you know, forced him to do all these terrible acts, and, you know, made him post, you know, to kill these kittens for these videos, you know, not just once, but twice, like that he was posting these videos in two separate occasions. But, you know, he tried to place all that blame onto Manny, right? He didn't want to take any responsibility for his own actions.
So was this Manny to him like his lover, or?
He was a lover, and made him do stuff for money. And he said that he was an American from New Mexico that he met while he was living in New York City. And that meeting apparently took place in about 2010. So this Manny person would try to convince Luca not to take his medication. So because Luca was medicated at times for his various medical conditions, his mental health issues. He said he was fearful of Manny, and, you know, Manny was abusive, and suggested that, you know, if they would make more money if they made these crush videos. And a crush video is like where a woman would like sit on a rabbit. But instead of a rabbit, that's where the kittens came in for the animal cruelty videos and things like that. So it just goes back to, you know, having someone to blame, really, is what I think.
But. Yeah, take it off. And so now, were you able to interview Luca at all or talk to him?
No, I didn't. So, which is unfortunate, but
yeah.
I'm sure, you know, in the years to come, people are going to be analyzing this case, and, you know, I'm sure with his love of the spotlight, he will speak to somebody someday. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it's sometime soon, you know?
Yeah. And so have you heard how he's doing in prison, or how he's surviving now?
I read some information in the psychological evaluation that was presented, you know, but, you know, about how he was afraid to go to the shower so he wouldn't get raped, and how he was wearing multiple layers of clothes and stuff, and just his manic behavior and stuff. But personally, my opinion, and I think that he was just putting on a good show for the doctors who had to testify for him. But like I said, this is just my opinion. How he's faring now, I'm not sure, but.
And so now, or does that worry you about having a book come out about someone like him, like a murderer like that? Does it ever kind of scare you a little bit? Do you ever get creeped out?
Not really. I mean, you know, journalism background, so.
No, but yeah, doesn't it worry? I mean, whenever, I think I would be a little bit.
You mean, like, do I worry if he ever got it?
One day, all of a sudden, you get a call and it's him?
You know, not really. I don't think he'll be able to get out of jail, but well, I wrote under a pen name, so
well,
just for
just
this
never,
purpose.
Oh, look at those guys that just got out in the States there.
Yeah,
you know, he
that's
might have
true.
Some cook on the side that gets him out, and then do you think he'll call you or come after you? Do you worry about stuff like that when you write, you know, other books? It's one thing, but when you're writing about something that's true and this person's still alive, do you ever worry that, or even think about, not necessarily worry, but do you ever think that they're going to read what you've written and they will kind of transcend, like put an opinion on it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, I know of some authors who do have people who call them even while they're committing crimes, you know? So it is something that could happen.
Yeah. I see, because that would kind of throw me a little, because he's alive and it's still, you know, it's not like something that happened 100 years ago and there's no, I would just be a little freaked out myself. But that's okay. It's you.
Yeah, so far so good.
So far so good. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Were you ever, get to talk to Lynn Jun's family or have you heard anything about how the family of Lynn Jun received all this and how it was played out for them? Was it
They gave very few media interviews during this whole thing. But if you read the book, what I decided to do, how I wanted to end this book, was not with something about Luca. I actually included the entire victim impact statement from the family. I thought it would be a disservice to Lynn to not include it. And it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
When I read it, I knew that this had to be included, and it had to be the end of the book, because I wanted to bring your focus back to his victim and what his family has to live with, because, I mean, it really is. It's just, it still makes me emotional just even thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this one person's caused a lot of trauma, not only with that family, but with anybody that was involved in the elementary school. Now, when he sent limbs to the schools, did anybody see them, or how, like, I mean, obviously somebody opened up.
Yes, they had to open them to finding what they were.
Right.
So can you imagine how traumatizing that would be?
Yeah.
I really can't imagine how traumatizing it must be. I mean, good Lord, I can't even.
Well, it's such an odd thing to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's really no reason for it. Coming to the school. It's not like he was trying to get back at someone there, or he cut up teachers and sent them to the school. You know what I mean? There was no real reference. Mm-hmm. So, that would just be kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So after this book now, so that you're done, and how do you feel? Like, do you feel good, and do you feel like you want to tackle another true crime now?
I feel really good. I'm really happy with how it turned out. My style of writing is more give you the facts, and you're not really going to get my opinion in there much. I kind of want to let you make up your own mind about the case. I mean, you know, I think talking to you today is actually, my opinion's coming across way more than what it did in the book.
Yeah.
But this is my first one, hopefully not my last. I do hope to do another one for sure. Taking the summer off right now before I look at the next topic that I might want to cover, but definitely just the beginning for me.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'll continue with it.
Yeah, no, that's great. And that's actually, I think, the way a good true crime book is written anyway. I mean, not so much opinion, but more about this is what happened, this is what you learned, and I think that's great. Is there any particular cases that interest you that you want to pursue now after your summer off?
I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to look around at some more cases. I'm going to read a few more books with you know, a bunch of different cases in them, and try to determine where I'd like to go from here. I have a couple I'm looking at, but you know, until I get the go ahead from my publisher, we'll see what happens with it.
Yeah. So. Now, do you have some contact information now for the listeners, if anybody wants to send you their opinion, or maybe send you information about a case, or maybe Luca wants to get a hold of you? how would they go about doing that?
Sure. You can go onto my website at KaraLeeCarter.com, and there's a contact form there. I'm also on Facebook. You can reach me on Facebook. And because I'm so new, I'm still branching out into my various social media sites, and, you know.
It takes time.
It does. It does. It's just been such a whirlwind, because the book wasn't supposed to be released until the 24th of July, but it actually did get released quite a bit earlier, over 20 days earlier, because I did end up finishing it early. So now I'm trying to get up to speed with all the social media stuff, but really, I'd love to hear from people. people hear their thoughts, good or bad, you know?
Yeah. No, it's all good feedback. And, you know, maybe Luca can help you out with managing social media. He has so many...
He knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, like, I don't know how he had time to keep up to all these different profiles between, you know, the 70 Facebook pages and all these blog posts and YouTube accounts. And I'm like, my gosh.
Yeah.
It just blows my mind.
Well, you think he would get them mixed up or something?
Put
the wrong picture on or something?
Well, what he would do is, you know, he would make a post under one name and then he'd log in as somebody else and comment so that it would seem like he had this huge following.
Oh, so he was building himself up, you know?
Right.
That's just
but
crazy.
Yeah. He must have spent all of his time at it.
That's crazy. But
it totally is.
Really a troubled soul, I would say.
He is. But he, you know, he's in jail. He's going to be serving his time for the next 25 years and he'll be medicated. So maybe that'll make a difference. Maybe he was just born this way. You don't know, or it could be have something to do with, you know, his environment growing up. And, you know, I'm sure that he will be studied.
Oh,
over
yeah.
So
many factors, you know, it's just.
So many factors that contributed to
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you taking some time. I know you're in busy schedule and taking the time and talking about your new book and some other things. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of the Z-Talk Radio Network.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.